welcome to Change Surfer Radio. For the next half hour, keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left as we present a sexy high-tech vision of our radically democratic future. Speaking with Barbara Hatch Rosenberg, she's a professor of environmental science at SUNY Purchase and the chair of the Federation of American Scientists Program on Biological Weapons Verification. Welcome, Dr. Rosenberg.
How do you do?
I've been working for the last couple of weeks to put together shows on the topic of bioterrorism, which has, being an apocalyptic turn of mind, I have fixated on this and actually been fixated on the problem of new emerging plagues for many years. But the novel of Richard Preston's Cobra Event, which he had written The Hot Zone, and this novel, The Cobra Event, is based on a bioterrorism incident, apparently not only got my attention, but also the president's, and there was a renewed push in the president's most recent budget to budget for bioterrorism preparation and an effort now among many federal agencies to prepare for this. And so I thought I'd give you a call and we could talk about the your efforts to monitor this.
Fine. And since you bring up the president and the Cobra event, let me just say that I was one of a panel of seven experts who advised the president on this issue a year ago. And of all of the seven of us, I was the only one who was really focused on the question of prevention. All the others were responding to concerns raised by the novel about what to do if there is an attack and how to prevent it spreading too far. In other words, how to mop up after a disaster rather than how to prevent that disaster. And I think that's one of the things that got the whole federal government's attack on this issue rolling toward the response side rather than the prevention side. I'm quite concerned that prevention is being insufficiently emphasized.
And we'll come back to that, because, which is ironic, actually, given the novel, because the central protagonists in the novel are involved in international weapons, bioweapons verification in Iraq. And they come back to the United States and they make the connection for themselves between what's happening in Iraq and Russia and what's the potential threats to the United States. So the questions that you raise are very pertinent.
Yes. Well, you know, many of the reports in the media say things like biological weapons, unlike other weapons of mass destruction, are very easy to make. Anybody could brew them up in their bathtub, and this gives the public the sense that that they're totally vulnerable and there's absolutely nothing you can do to prevent it. It's absolutely untrue. I think the risk of terrorism from a nut of the type who might try to do it in the bathtub is no greater than of a nut with a gun, and there are plenty of those around. I don't think that an individual or a small group can do that much damage. To do something serious with biological weapons takes large resources and a lot of expertise, a lot of testing and experimentation, and it's something that requires basically a government's resources, not a group, unless it's a very extraordinary group. So it's state-sponsored terrorism, I think, that we have to be concerned about.
Now, you say that it takes a government, but there have been literally thousands of scares, anthrax-related scares, since a couple years ago when a neo-Nazi in Ohio ordered anthrax through the mail and decided that he was going to become his own biological weapons factory. So there are people in the United States who are trying to...
Yes, there are a lot of nuts. They're mostly nuts. And you notice that not a single person has been injured. In most cases, it hasn't even been anthrax. These are just the copycats who read reports and decide they're going to scare people with it. But to use it as a weapon of mass destruction, as I say, takes sophistication that these people don't have.
Well, let's talk for a minute about what these agents are, because I don't think most of the public, when you say a weaponized virus, they have much of an idea what we're talking about.
Yes.
Well, what's an example of a weaponized biological weapon?
Well, smallpox is the best example of a weaponized virus, and we know that the Soviet Union did weaponize it for use as a weapon and produced tens of tons of it. It's just an incredible amount. We know this from defectors who were part of that program. They certainly had the biggest, most elaborate, and most frightening biological weapons program that there ever has been. And that kind of thing is what frightens me, not small-scale terrorism in the U.S. The prospect of a country's building a program like that, or even much smaller, such as the one in Iraq, and possibly of supplying those materials to terrorists, in other words, using a sophisticated program and teaching people how to use it, that's what worries me, and also the possibility that they might engineer a new agent that doesn't exist now, a new disease, a pathogen, that could escape, could find a niche in the environment, and could become a new disease that we'd all be subject to.
Now, when you say that they, let's go back again. I just want to get the technical picture in people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
These agents aren't necessarily that you give it to one person and it spreads like wildfire through a population, but they actually created vats of smallpox and then turned it into something that could be put into a warhead and then burst over a city.
That's right. And smallpox is an extremely communicable infectious disease. It's very, very readily spread from person to person. That's why it's particularly suitable if that's what you want to do. So if a new pathogen were engineered to be particularly easy to spread, you know, as an aerosol, the way you spread colds with a cough, you know how easily those are spread. That's the kind of thing that frightens me.
Right. And some of these agents that have been explored are so contagious that even one organism that would be spread into the air that landed in your lungs would infect you.
Well, that's not the normal situation, no. I mean, it can happen with certain agents, but in general, no, it takes a much larger dose. And that's one of the reasons why it's very difficult to make a biological attack. Delivering the right dose in the right form without inactivating it and from the right strain and so on is a very exacting discipline.
So far with the agents that we know about.
Yes.
Right. Now, the Russians were engaging in this research. I learned a lot of this history from the Cobra event, actually, but according to the Cobra event, the Russians were engaging in this research during the years after which Richard Nixon forswore our own biological weapons production and that we had signed a biological weapons treaty.
Right, and so had they. And in fact, the United States, the United Kingdom and the Soviet Union were the three depository governments for the treaty. They were, as it were, the sponsors of it. And immediately, one of those sponsors began to violate the treaty. And the reason why we really didn't know about this for a long, long time is that that treaty has no verification provisions. It's basically a gentleman's agreement. In fact, it has has worked remarkably well in the sense that there are only maybe 10 countries in the world that are known to have tried or be in the process of trying to develop biological weapons, or suspected, I should say, even. But that's not good enough. We need a treaty that has teeth. And right now, finally, the governments, the countries that belong to that treaty are in the process of trying to negotiate a verification regime for it. And I think that this is one of the major props, one of the major routes to prevention. To have a regime in which we can go in and inspect, look at places that that are possibly suspected or could be capable of making biological weapons and make certain that they're not.
Now, the major thing that would pop to people's minds and pops to my mind when you say that is that we have now pulled out of Iraq and are raining bombs on Iraq in a very futile effort to change the government there and to get them to stop doing nasty things like making biological weapons. Given our relative lack of success in Iraq and Yugoslavia and many other places of verification of treaties and peacekeeping and monitoring and so on, well, why do you think that we'll be able to put together a verification regime that will be effective?
Well, I think that what you just said is a misperception about the nature of verification and what we're trying to do. A verification regime is not intended to stop a program. It's to uncover every tiny aspect of it. It's intended to uncover the fact that a program exists, so that then the other countries of the world know that the country that's found to have a program is dangerous, will keep an eye on it, can impose sanctions, as we have on Iraq, can do whatever they feel is important to prevent that country from going on and further developing or using biological weapons. And I think we've been successful in that in Iraq. So in terms of verification, I think that the UNSCOM program in Iraq has been a vindication that it's possible. Those inspectors determined very early on that Iraq, that they were suspicious that there was something going on. They didn't have the details for a long time, but they were suspicious and they knew that they had to keep at it. And that was the important thing. They did keep at it and they finally got the data.
How about the Sudanese factory that we blew up? We weren't able to verify.
It was a stupid mistake. Should never have been done. And it's the sort of thing that sets back verification and sets back the credibility of the United States and in biological weapons control. We should have had much better information before going ahead with that. It was kind of a seat-of-the-pants operation, I think, followed just because of anger at the embassy's destruction in Africa.
Hmm. Now, obviously, at least from my perspective, Russia would be the principal concern here because it had the largest biological weapons program in the world, and all of the sub-states of Russia are disintegrating, and the scientific apparatus there is slowly being sold off piecemeal to the third world.
Yes.
What do we do about that?
Well, the United States does have several programs that are very good in terms of trying to collaborate with those scientists in peaceful operations so as to give them work and occupy them in ways that don't involve biological weapons and prevent them from being lured into other countries such as Iraq. But the U.S. programs are not nearly big enough. And this is an example, I think, that it would be much more valuable for us to be putting some of the large sums of money that are now being looked for biological defense in this country. I think a much greater safeguard would be to do more to prevent these Russian scientists from moving into other countries.
So get them making medicine instead
That's right.
Bombs.
That's right. That's right.
Now, that brings us back to the question of the defenses that we are preparing and the kinds of priorities that the money here is being put into.
Mm-hmm.
You agree wholeheartedly, I take it, with the need for a public health monitoring system for the rapid identification of emerging diseases, since you've written about that and sponsored that.
Right. Well, this is something that all completely apart from biological weapons that's urgently needed right now because infectious diseases have reemerged as a major threat, not just in the developing world, but also in the United States. We thought we'd conquered them. It was thought 20 years ago that they were finished. We'd wipe them out completely as far as the developed world was concerned, but this turned out not to be true. Instead, we find new diseases emerging both here and in other parts of the world. We find diseases moving around the world much faster than they used to because of the frequent traveling, the speed of travel, so that people travel when they have been exposed to a disease but are not yet sick, but they come to a new place, a new country, and then they get sick and have, in the meantime, spread this disease all over the place. So this is a serious concern and really a much greater concern to the United States than biological weapons are. But fortunately, what we can do to try to combat the emerging diseases problem is also helpful to cope with possible biological weapons use. So what we need is better surveillance for unusual diseases, faster recognition, and being able to differentiate unusual from the normal outbreaks that are occurring all the time of various sorts.
Now, the CDC has a weekly morbidity and mortality report that is available on the web and is emailed to doctors who want it, and it reports on the outbreaks of unusual diseases. Why isn't this adequate?
Well, it isn't because, first of all, the CDC only requires reporting on a certain small number of diseases, and of course none of these are unknown or unusual. They're not common colds, of course, but they're things that they're not the kind of things that essentially never happen in the United States. What we need is surveillance for that kind of thing, because that would be what a biological weapon would be. That would be what AIDS would have been when it first showed up. And there are going to be new things like AIDS.
So hemorrhagic diseases, things
that
kill and bleed out rapidly.
Yes.
And you've also helped create a global monitoring network. What is that?
Yes, we have. Well, the Federation of American Scientists was the founder of an internet list called ProMed Mail. It means Program for Monitoring Emerging Diseases by Email. And it now has 15,000 participants in more than 150 countries around the world. These are mostly people in the field, infectious disease field, doctors and health workers who report when outbreaks occur, who follow the scientific literature and also the newspapers, which are one of the primary sources of early information on outbreaks. And who report to this system by email, so you get very rapid reports and confirmation from other sources once they see a report. And it's the first and only system, worldwide system, for infectious disease reporting. This is really important, and the World Health Organization appreciates it greatly because they depend on official government reports of outbreaks. And governments are usually, frequently, very reluctant to report outbreaks, at least until they get really bad, because they don't want to inhibit tourism or trade. And in fact, that happens. When India, for example, had an outbreak of plague a few years ago, they lost hundreds of millions of dollars in trade because countries were afraid to import things, for example. Sometimes this is not realistic. It's not really necessary to the disease can't be communicated by certain kinds of trade, but nonetheless, this kind of things happen. So this makes countries reluctant to report outbreaks. But now, with the ProMed Mail reporting system by email, it's so rapid and comes from any kind of a source that the information can be found. Governments can't get away with keeping quiet, and this is a big help to WHO because they cannot go in to help stop the spread of a disease until it's been officially recognized by a government.
Another one of the directions that the current research is going is research into vaccinations and different kinds of biodefenses, bioremediation of agents.
Yes. Well,
vaccinations is an inherently problematic strategy with this, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I think it makes sense for smallpox to stockpile smallpox vaccine because we have a good one. It's been certainly well tested for many, many years on millions and hundreds of millions of people. And if there were an outbreak, we should have the vaccine available to fly into wherever it occurred. And I think with anthrax too, if we had a vaccine that was reliable, since that is the most likely biological weapon to be used anywhere, that there should be stockpiles in the world.
Half a million doses.
Yes, and it's not a there are a lot of problems with it. I don't want to go into that now, but it's sort of a questionable situation. But if there were a good vaccine or if one could be developed, yes, that would be one. But in general, stockpiling vaccines is not the answer because there are too many possible biological weapons. There are too many possible pathogens that could be used as weapons. You never know what it would be. And especially in the future, there could be entirely new types of things genetically engineered that you couldn't anticipate. And it takes a long, long time to develop a vaccine and test it. I mean, many years. So it's not something you can do when the outbreak occurs. We need to find other ways, other broad-spectrum prophylactic means. And there's research going on in that respect.
Even without engineers attempting to consciously evade existing vaccines, this year the major flu vaccine didn't turn out to be addressed to the major strands of influenza that spread across the country. So.
That's right. And, of course, influenza is the best example we know of a disease that regularly spreads around the world in a matter of months. We have a new strain every couple of years. Of course, the worst global epidemic that the Earth has experienced, at least among humans, was the 1918 flu epidemic, killed more people.
So your general approach and the approach, I assume, of FAS is not that the efforts, the concerns around this topic are counterproductive, because they can be turned, the monies can be turned in ways that will support efforts that are generally useful for public health and for the preparation for emerging diseases. What are ways in which this is less helpful, this is the concern about bioterrorism?
You mean what is being done that would be less useful for natural disease?
Less useful, and I guess my question is also, is this perhaps an effort to scare the American public, give a new raison d'etre to the military-industrial complex?
Well, I think that there certainly is, some salivation among some firms that think they could make a lot of money by stockpiling vaccines or what have you. That may or may not be useful. I mean, but this, of course, happens with everything the government wants to spend money on. I'm sure there's a taker out there waiting to get its hands on it. But I think that some very careful thought needs to be given, and that the emphasis should be on the development and the spending money on things that have a wide usage against disease and are not just targeted at what I consider to be a very small possibility of a serious biological terrorism attack in this country.
Well, I want to really commend your work and recommend that people check out the links that you have for the FAS at www.fas.org. And are there other documents or websites that you think people should take a look at?
Well, anyone who's interested in infectious diseases might want to look at ProMed's website at www.health. I think it's usa.healthnet.org.
Mm-hmm. And thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
This morning, Desperation AM. What I've been saying won't say them again. My head's not empty, it's full with my brain. The thoughts I'm thinking like piss down a drain. And I feel like a beetle on its back. And there's no way for me to get up. Love will get you like a case of anthrax. And that's something I don't want to catch. These groups to control.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS FM at the University of Connecticut in Storrs. If you want to learn more about radical democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about this show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. Also, check out past and future shows and myriad relevant links at the website, www.changesurfer.com.